GoDaddy.com. Use the code POD139, that's POD139, for 10% off GoDaddy hosting. GoDaddy.com. Tango Tango Papa 1108, July 7, 2009.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Interstate 81, probably about 68 miles or so left to drive to make it to Hazleton, Pennsylvania. Spent the night wherever it was, I think White Pine, Tennessee. So woke up, I guess it was about 12:30 this afternoon, my time. Woke up and got up and got headed towards Pennsylvania. And so I've, apart from stopping there in the Carlisle area to get fuel and get something to eat for supper, I've been pretty much driving non-stop. So once I make it to Hazleton, it'll be about, I don't know, I think it was going to be about a 578 or 580 mile day. So kind of a full day, and then hopefully once I do the drop and hook at Hazleton, Pennsylvania, then I'll be able to find a place to park my truck. That might be a problem. But hopefully I'll be able to find a place to park, and then be ready, to go again, probably about noon or so, if once I've taken a 10-hour break. So today, a couple of different people, it was kind of funny, there was two different people sent a message late this afternoon. I guess it was around 4:20 in the afternoon. There were two different people sent a message saying, well, since you missed the July 4th, you didn't get home for July 4th, I wanted to be home on the 2nd. You didn't get home for the July 4th holiday, then do you still want to go home? Well, yes. So I sent them a message. Both of them, I sent two different messages back saying that, yep, I still want to go home and take my time off. So, so I don't know. I haven't, I did a little more research, into different trucking companies. And, you got to be careful about trucking companies, because some of them are, they're really kind of devious in the way they treat their employees, and then there are other ones that are more straightforward. And so what you've really got to do is pay attention to what the people that actually have worked for them have to say, and check them out in that way before you make any judgment. Because, quite frankly, recruiters for any trucking company will always make things seem rosy. And I haven't contacted any recruiters or I haven't done that yet, but I'm still doing, kind of in a research phase. And so we'll wait and see, you know, kind of wait and see what happens. But I don't know, this idling thing, you know, I've been kind of setting, setting the temperature a bit higher, and that does make it so that it doesn't run quite as much. And then it's, and now it's actually cooler. This evening it's actually kind of cool, but of course I'm here in Pennsylvania. I don't know, it's not really that cool. It's 72 degrees, but compared with the heat that I've been in, it actually almost seems chilly in a way. that's kind of amazing how that works. I guess it's just psychological maybe, but it does seem cooler. You know, I stopped there. I went to New Kingston and filled the truck up with fuel. And then went back a couple of miles up the road back to, there's a Pilot truck stop up there. That's actually in Carlisle. Went to the Pilot truck stop and had to kind of wait there in line for a while so I could pull up to the fuel island and then run inside, and there's a Wendy's in there, and so I, you know, went inside and got something to eat. And you know, it did, at 72 degrees it does seem kind of cool, you know, kind of compared to the heat I've been in. So at 72 degrees the truck's not going to run very much, you know, so, you know, at least when it's parked. And you know, and you got the optimized idle engaged. So, you know, I am going to try to cut it back. But again, I don't want to put myself in a position of actually getting fired. You know, if I'm close to it, you know, if I'm, you know, they have this point system. And, you know, the company does. They've got this point system and different things. Like if they find a problem in your logbook, that can take some points off. And, you know, quite frankly, you know, there's been some problems with my logbook over time. I've really tried to keep the thing, you know, make it as accurate and keep it as legal as I possibly can, but sometimes I do make mistakes, and you know, occasionally they do find things. And you know, there's a time or two where I've really got, you know, the way they've scheduled things, there's once in a while where I've got to kind of stretch things, and you know, either create, you know, I'm kind of between a rock and a hard place. You know, where I will have to, you know, if I, you know, I've either got to try to stretch things, or I will, you know, if I say, oh, I, you know, I'm 15 minutes away, but sorry, I'm out of time, can't get there. That's, you know, they're not going to like that. And, you know, so, you know, if I'm going to have to stretch something, I would rather, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but I would rather stretch it on the side of actually making the delivery, or, you know, usually it's a delivery. I'd rather stretch it on the side of actually making the delivery rather than if it's just going to be 15 minutes or so, you know, I'm not going to say, oh, I'm out of time, sorry, didn't quite make it, too bad. So I don't know, but so there's, you know, I probably, you know, I know I have some points, and they've got a point system, and I, you know, I'm not even sure where I really stand on that, but they sort of use that, you know, and then there may be, maybe they've taken some points off because of this idle thing. That's that's entirely possible. So I don't want to put myself in the position. If I'm close to being out of points, I would rather kind of voluntarily, before anything happens, I would rather just kind of voluntarily make an exit and go somewhere else, as opposed to taking the risk of actually getting canned. I've never been fired from any job in my life, and I don't want to start now. So I do think it's probably, you know, I am gonna continue to do some research, and then you know, once I've done the research and I've kind of narrowed things down, then I'll start contacting recruiters and maybe, you know, trying to talk to drivers that I might run across as the opportunities present themselves, and kind of see what the actual drivers have to say. Now, you can find a lot of that online. Not always, but there is quite a bit of it online if you kind of know where to look, know where to search, and what to search for. So, you know, that's a resource. And then also, you know, being able to talk to drivers in person is also useful, although that can be worthless as well. It just depends on the driver that you're talking to, and, you know, and I can get a pretty good sense of people pretty quickly, you know, what kind of people they are, you know, and then I can kind of judge whether or not I can, you know, if they're complaining about a company, I can kind of judge whether or not they're telling the truth, or if they're, not really necessarily if they're telling the truth, but if their perceptions are really correct. I guess, you know, it's interesting, you know, because if you got a good sense of people, you can kind of, I never really had thought of it this way, but you can kind of determine whether or not their perceptions are screwed up. You know, they can't see it, but oftentimes you can. You can kind of get a sense of somebody and find out, you know, you can kind of tell whether or not they've got their head screwed on straight, and whether or not they're looking at the world around them properly. And that can go a long ways to, you know, towards sort of determining whether or not someone really has, you know, what they're saying or how they perceive the world. That can go a long ways to determine, you know, whether you can really take what they're saying and really apply it, or if it's just, you know, their perceptions are obviously screwed up, and so you just kind of, in that case, discount what they say. And you know, so there is that aspect to it, you know, because quite frankly, there are a lot of people in the world, their perceptions are damaged. And I think to a certain extent, all of our perceptions are damaged. They're kind of in a damaged state. And got to be careful about that, because, you know, it's kind of another way of saying that, you know, like if somebody goes to a bar to cry in your beer, and you got all the other people around you that are crying too, and, you know, birds of a feather flock together, and everybody's all, you know, giving each other sympathy. And you know, so in other words, everybody's sort of sharing around the broken perceptions that are similar. And so you got to be careful about that, because if you're dealing with somebody that, for whatever reason, if you're dealing with somebody that shares sort of shares your broken perception of the world, and you kind of reinforce each other, then that can be a prescription for disaster. Especially, well, you know, in a number of different ways, you know, but especially if you're gonna do business with them, or if you are, for example, you end up marrying a person like that, you know, where you share damaged perceptions, you know, and you're kind of rubbing each other's back to, you know, to sort of validate their broken perception, you know, because they validate yours, you know, it's a kind of a mutual admiration society that you have going there, and that can be very dangerous, you know, when it comes to business or in many different aspects. So, you know, there is that aspect to it. In any case, I'll just do some research and we'll see, kind of see what happens with it. But, you know, I do think that I probably want to make the change. I definitely want to make the change. If I'm in any danger at all of getting fired for whatever reason, you know, and it really has nothing to do with whether or not I've delivered the loads. You know, I've never been late on a load. I'm not, you know, I do the job, and I do it as legally as I possibly can. But yet they've got these nitpicky little things that, you know, they want this and they want that, and not only do you have to do the job perfectly, but we also want this and that, and, you know, and including no more than 20% idle time. Well, you know, you multiply the number of hours out, you know, in 3 weeks, you multiply those number of hours out kind of versus the number of hours that I actually spend driving. And then, you know, you subtract the numbers of hours that I spent driving, and the rest of the time is pretty much spent in the truck. You know, I'm not spending very much time in truck stops. Most of the rest of that time is spent in the truck, and, you know, and they want it no more than 20% idle time for all the rest of those hours. And that just doesn't really compute very well. In the Congress right now, you know, of course, that so-called cap and trade bill passed the House, and don't know what's happening with it in the Senate. It wouldn't really shock me if it passed. You know, I would hope that it wouldn't pass, but I'm afraid it's going to. And if it does, that's basically our country committing economic suicide, because it's really a tax bill. You know, it's called cap and trade, and you know, it's sort of based around this global warming hoax that's not happening. And but there are people that believe it's happening because they've, you know, they're suggestible. And that's the basic problem with the country and the world at large, but certainly with the United States, is that there are too many people that are suggestible, including the people in Congress, because it's easy to buy them off, and that's basically what's happening. They're being bought off. They bought them off in the House. They bought enough people off in order to pass that, and they're going to attempt to do the same thing in the Senate. But the real problem revolves around the fact that there are far too many people, voters, just out in the general voting population, that are in a suggestible state, and so that's another way of saying that they're slaves. And so they're going to, you know, cannibals are going to elect cannibal kings. They're going to elect a cannibal. You know, if you have a bunch of cannibals, they're going to elect someone that eats the most people of all. And so if people have character flaws, in other words, they're naturally going to elect people that have character flaws to be their representatives in a representative republic. So the problem beyond that, I mean, it's going to destroy the economy. You think we got problems now, well, wait until the if this thing passes, it's basically an energy tax, and it's going to kill everything. It's just going to utterly destroy everything. There's going to be food shortages. Of course, the price of food will go up if that happens. You may have people going hungry. It can really potentially create real chaos, chaos of the likes we have that are alive today in the U.S. have never seen. Most of us have, you know, especially if we were born here, we've never seen that kind of, the kind of chaos that will result from that. And you know, I'm beginning to think this is all by design. There are people that are trying to create chaos. You know, the Rahm Emanuel, you know, never let a good crisis go to waste. They're trying to create crises, in order to get people worn down and to the point where they'll say, okay, here's Obama says, well, okay, I can fix it. I've got a solution, I'll fix it. And finally people will just give in and say, well, fix it then. And, you know, I'm afraid we're going to end, you know, inevitably, one way or another, we're going to end up in a dictatorship because there's just too many people that are too suggestible, too many people that want to be slaves, that they are slaves, whether they realize it or not. And they're demanding someone to kind of run their lives for them. And so, if you have a country that's got a dictator, what enables the dictatorship to work is the fact that the majority of the people are in a slave mentality and they'll go along with whatever the greatest power is. And furthermore, people that are engaged in that kind of groupthink will see people that aren't engaged, that don't see the world the same way they do, that aren't slaves. They see them as a problem, and they'll try their best to either point that person out or, in the case of a dictatorship, you know, a totalitarian dictatorship, then they would be turning that person in. You know, if somebody didn't think the right way, the quote-unquote right way, they'd be turning them in, turning people in, turning their fellow citizens in, snitching. And, you know, it's a rather frightening prospect. So, I don't know, we're in a really, really dangerous position at this point. And, you know, I don't know if the country's going to end up breaking up, because it could. The country could end up breaking up. You could end up, you know, the federal government, you know, I think what's happening right now, because of you look at the lunacy of the state government of California, you just look at the total lunacy of the state, you know, the state is basically bankrupt, and I think what's going to happen, the federal government is going to come in and take it over. And it's the federal government's probably going to try to do that with, you know, they're opportunistic. If you look at the federal government as sort of an opportunistic infection, it's sort of morphed into something that it shouldn't be. You know, the bats have been in the belfry for a while, but now that, you know, it's gotten worse, and so you'll have the probably end up with the federal government trying, you know, just coming in and assuming control of a bunch of different states. Now, they'll do that under the auspices of, we'll give you money, we'll give you, you know, California state government, we're going to give you some money. Or, you know, which whatever other states, probably the state of New York's in a similar position, maybe New Jersey. So, you know, and there's a bunch of other states that are, their revenue, there was this article I posted on my TruckerTomPodcast.com website that was talking about, this article was, I think, you know, it was basically New Jersey, but it was talking about how all of these people, you know, since the housing market went bust, people are demanding that the counties come in and revalue their property so that their tax rate goes back down, because, you know, the counties were really happy to come in many places. The counties were really happy, the local governments were really happy to come in and bump the value up, you know, what they thought was, you know, because it was increasing market value. Of course, it was artificially inflated, but they were happy to bump it up so that they could bump the tax rate up, you know, the amount that people had to pay in taxes. And now that it's going down, people by the, you know, just they're overrunning governments, local assessors are being overrun with people challenging their assessment rate, and they want their property value, you know, the taxable value lowered. And so therefore local governments all over the place are experiencing revenue shortfall. Of course, they've bloated too. They've been bloated by this you know, this so-called housing bubble, which is really just it's kind of the culmination of the credit bubble. So the credit card lifestyle that's in this credit bubble infected every part of our economy, including the, you know, local governments. Everything got bloated, infected, sort of bloated, and now their revenues are plunging, and, you know, they're running out of money pretty quick. And so the federal government, this, you know, they can print money. The federal government can just say, oh, we'll print more. And so we'll rescue you. We'll rescue you, California or New Jersey or New York or whatever state it is. And, of course, that means that essentially they're being taken over. Because, you know, somebody, you know, if federal government just doesn't come in and give money, there's always strings attached. Ask General Motors, which I guess today they announced that they were changing the name of General Motors to National Motors, if you can believe that. That's almost like a you know, the best satire writer couldn't even write that. Who could dream that up? But that's actually what they've said. Oh, we're going to change the name of this. It's going to be National Motors. And, you know, it's ridiculous. So that may indeed cause the country to break up. It could well do that. And probably Texas is going to be the first to go. So, you know, and I don't know. There are people that are saying that if Texas actually did break away from the Union, that probably the border states would go with it, which would include Arkansas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, and, you know, New Mexico. So I don't know. I'd be happy with that, you know, get rid of the federal government, because, you know, we're in a very precarious position. Extremely precarious position as a country at this point. And it's all because there are too many suggestible people. The percentage of people overall is way up there. And as I've, as I was talking about in, I guess, a few podcasts ago, I wonder what the percentage of suggestible people, is from state to state. That would be interesting. If there'd be some way of determining that, that would be interesting. And I guess you could kind of just look at the last election results and kind of use that as some sort of a gauge, you know, the state-by-state presidential election results. You could probably use that as a gauge to find out roughly how many suggestible people, what the percentage of the suggestible people population is in all those different states. And I'd say, of course, you know, California, New York, maybe Pennsylvania. There's a lot of states where that population of suggestible people is pretty high. And in other places such as Texas or Arkansas or Louisiana, Oklahoma, New Mexico, and other states where it's much lower, and you got people that are not nearly on average in as brainwashed of a condition. So something's going to happen. We're hurtling toward, currently we're hurtling towards a cliff, as the United States of America, is hurtling right towards a cliff, kind of going off the cliff. And something's going to happen. Don't know what it's going to be exactly, but something's going to have to happen. And hate to see it. You know, you hate to see your country go to hell the way it's going. But again, I mean, this hasn't been an instant process. This has been in progress for probably 30 or 40 years. And we're just now to the point where everything comes to a head. And the result is not going to be pretty. On my blog, or on my website, truckertompodcast.com, I posted a link to Roy Masters. He wrote this, it's about 80 pages now. It's a theory, his theory of basically the universe. It's a kind of a physics white paper that he wrote. And, I've mentioned it a couple of times. And so I called in to his program on July the 3rd. And you can currently, you should be able to listen to that streaming. And maybe you can download it. It's at fhu.com. F as in Frank, H-U.com. It's in the upper left corner. It says Science Friday, and listen here, and it's July the 3rd. But I'm going to see if I can't download that, and if I can, then I will cut out the part where I called in, and I basically ask him what, you hear this physicist talk about time, space, and I basically asked him what time was. You know, it's beyond, what we measure with, we've devised ways of measuring it with clocks and kind of synchronizing ourselves. But what is time? And, he had a very interesting discussion about that. But what I would suggest is downloading that gravity-driven universe PDF file that he has, and it's about 80 pages at this point. And I would suggest reading through it, You know, it may be, parts of it may be a little dense and a little difficult to understand, but, you know, just kind of approach it with an open mind, and it's really not all that difficult to understand, you know, and if you kind of get stuck, just read through it, and then, you know, he uses some examples that kind of make sense to help you visualize the concepts that he's talking about. And then if you can, you know, what I did, I read through it the first time, and then I, you know, just kind of set it aside for a while, and then I read through it again, and I read through it again. And so now, at this point, I've read through it about 3 times, and now I've gotten to the point where I really understand what he's saying. And basically the gist of what he is saying is that gravity, rather than being a property of matter, you know, like we were all taught that gravity is a property of matter, you know, and they talk about gravitons or whatever the hell that is. Rather than gravity being a property of matter, what he is saying is that gravity is kind of omnipresent everywhere, and it's a, you think of it as a, sort of an ethereal force, something we can't see, you know, we perceive it as space, we actually perceive it as space and time, but it's sort of everywhere present in the universe, coming and going in every direction that you can think of, with, you know, speeds well beyond the speed of light, and it passes right through itself. But with the exception that it, you know, this gravity is sort of a, you know, kind of a unified field. It makes space, three-dimensional space that we know about, kind of makes three-dimensional space, but where, you know, it kind of creates little spins, and you know, the spins kind of become particles, and that becomes matter, and then you know, matter basically evolves out of that, and then like the weak, so-called weak nuclear field, and the strong nuclear, or weak nuclear force, strong nuclear force, and then and electricity and what have you, kind of come out of that. And so basically everything is kind of made out of gravity, whatever that is. We don't have a clue what it is, and there's no way of you know, really knowing. You know, maybe someday we'll figure it out, or we'll understand the, you know, we can understand the properties of it, but just imagine, you know, basically the gist of it is, you imagine this force that's going in every direction you can possibly think of, and you know, and it's able to just pass through itself, but when it hits a piece of you know, a particle or matter, you know, the matter resists it, and it regulates, for example, the speed of light, because the light, the particles or the waves, you know, and they're not really sure whether it is light's a particle or a wave, but that's carried along by the gravity at an, you know, it, but the gravity coming in the other direction resists it. And so then you end up with the speed of, you know, the speed of light, 186,000 miles per second. And, you know, and then the other thing, you know, if matter, you know, you try to push matter, if you're in a spaceship and you tried to accelerate your spaceship up towards the speed of light with, you know, using conventional means, you push harder, you know, you apply more and more energy, it, you know, as you begin to approach the speed of light, the gravity coming in the opposite direction would basically flatten, you know, just flatten the spaceship out like a pancake. But, you know, so it's, this gravity is everywhere, if you can imagine that. But wherever there's, you know, if you can imagine where there's the best way to, you know, the image that he uses to sort of visualize it is if you imagine a stream, like you've got a kind of a stream flowing by and you're standing out in the middle of the stream, and where you're standing, you're sort of part, you know, you're causing the water that's flowing, you know, you're kind of causing that to flow around you, and where, you know, you're standing on either side, you know, kind of causes a swirl. You know, if you can imagine a swirl, kind of one on one side and one on the other going in opposite, you know, they're swirling in opposite directions, but it causes a little spin. And that spin actually becomes more dense than the surrounding stream, even though it's all made out of water. It becomes more dense, and the spin action is kind of gyroscopic, and so therefore it, that spinning water resists the flow of the main flow of the water. And so that spinning water would be the equivalent of a particle that was being created, you know, if you can just kind of use that as a as an analogy. And you know, and when I asked him what time, you know, time was, you know, from a physics standpoint, he said, just imagine you got this spinning, you know, this little spinning eddy, you know, if that's a particle of matter, then where the water is flowing around that spin, that where that curves around that spin, that's time. And so gravity becomes time to the matter. And you know, so it's you know, and you know, and as soon as he explained what it was in that way, I was able to grasp what he was saying, and it makes perfect sense. So, but it's, you know, it's an interesting theory that he has. And also what he is saying is that there is vast amounts of energy everywhere. You know, if you look up in the night sky, you know, if you're in a dark, kind of a dark area, and you look up in the night sky and you think you're looking out in space, you're looking out at something that's just black, and you see stars, you know, here and there, but you're looking out into the blackness. You know, it's not just emptiness that you're looking at. You're looking out and at something that you can't see, obviously, because it's just empty space. We perceive it as empty space, but it's actually, you know, filled with this, you know, it's you're looking out at gravity, basically. You can't, you know, it's not something you can see with your eyes. But at the same time, you know, the gravity, you know, rather than being a pull, is actually a push. And it's kind of, you know, pushing us down on the earth. That's what holds us to the earth, because of the you know, it's actually pushing against the earth, and it holds us down. And so he's saying that among other things, that the earth is or not the earth necessarily, but that space, any point in space, is full of unimaginable amounts of energy. And so, you know, you use the right, you know, you think of it in the right way, and you use the right technology, which we already have, and you should be able to extract energy from any point in space, you know, kind of, if you just know how to drill for it, if you want to put it in those words. So it's an extremely interesting theory, and it does make sense to me. But if, you know, if you can accept the fact that you know, kind of approach it with an open mind and accept and begin to understand what he's saying, and it makes sense to you, then you know, you have to ask yourself, well, how is it that matter spins just at the right speed, you know, that the particles spin just at the right speed? How is it that they spin just at the right speed so that, so that it's able to exist and everything's able to hold together? You know, this force that is spinning everything is precisely, it's just precisely just right. If there were a few things were just a little different, you know, the universe might still exist, but we wouldn't, you know, there wouldn't be any human beings. So, you know, our life wouldn't be possible as we know it. So, you know, this, but this force, this gravity, whatever it is, that is, that, you know, gives birth to matter and space and time and what have you, is obviously an intelligent force. There's an, you know, I really believe it's an intelligent force behind it. And, but be that as it may, it gives rise to human beings. Somehow it gave rise to human beings. How did that happen? And not only did it give rise to life, but it, you know, gave rise to human beings, but we have minds and we can think about these things and we can understand. We have the ability to understand. And, you know, for people that are just, you know, dyed-in-the-wool atheists, and they've made a religion, and people do that, they make a religion out of atheism. You know, you can just look at, watch some of those TED Talks, especially where, you know, just these different people that go to that, and a lot of them are, you know, they're kind of atheists to the point where it's a religion. And they're running down religion, traditional religion. They're running down the idea that there's a God, and they want to kind of believe the idea that it's all just random happenstance and blah, blah, blah. But the thing is, you can always tell when someone is making a religion out of anything. And I mean, a religion can be made out of anything that you can imagine. When someone is making a religion out of something, by definition, they have to run something down. There's always got to be something wrong. They always pick some group to run down. And that's a hallmark of a person that's kind of adopted a type of groupthink. You know, the groupthink demands that other groups be sort of denigrated and ran down and poo-pooed. And, you know, so that's one way that you can know that, you know, that people are engaged in groupthink. Because they always, always, always have to run something down, or multiple things down, in order to build themselves up. You know, tear someone else down to build, in order to build yourself up in your own mind. And, but if you can kind of understand this theory that he has, then it really gets to the heart of what is it that sustains us human, you know, that sustains human beings, that not only brought us into existence, but also supplies us, or, you know, sort of acts on us as a conscience. But we don't have to see, human beings are different from other animals. Other animals must follow their instincts. Human beings have a choice. We have a choice. We've been given a choice to either follow basically the force that brought us into existence and sustains our existence, or we can try to become our own God, you know, try to become our own God kind of egotistically, and you know, of course that puts us at war with the real God, at war with our conscience. And it, when it really comes down to it, you know, whether you, you know, if you want to believe in God, regardless of the physics, I mean, you can understand his theory, and you know, whether you, you know, you can just kind of take it or leave it. As far if you want to be atheistic, you can just say, well, there's this force, and just simply accept the fact that there's a force that, you know, it's called gravity, that that's kind of sustaining everything, and you can just say, yep, that's it, there it is, we have this force, it just happened to be there, it's just random happenstance. And you can still think that way, and the theory still makes perfect sense. But when it comes to whether you want to believe in God or not, it really depends on whether or not you have a willingness to face your conscience. And, you know, what amazes me is that the people that want to say, oh, there's no such thing as God, and they poo-poo the idea of there being a God, yet they can look at an animal and they can understand perfectly well that that animal has instincts that it has to follow. But yet they can't, you know, they do something funny in their minds so that, you know, they look at human beings as some sort of aberration, or, you know, they try to say we evolved. Well, that's all well and good, but then, you know, then if that's true, then why do they hate human beings? Because invariably they hate themselves, they hate their own kind. And but it's just, to me, I can look at that and it's just evidence that they're egotistical, and you know, egos are always at war with each other.
It's now a bit later. I have dropped and hooked at Hazleton, Pennsylvania, and it turned out that as soon as I sent the empty message, they sent a load offer that picks up at Palmyra, Pennsylvania, that delivers to Edwardsville, Illinois, which is basically St. Louis. And, you know, that's going in the right direction anyway. Gets me closer to home. So, you know, I immediately accepted it, and then so I came down here to the about 45 miles. I determined I could drive about 45 more miles to, you know, before I hit the 11-hour mark on driving, and so I, you know, that gave me just enough time to come down here to Pine Grove. There's a truck stop here where I was at, I don't know, probably about a week and a half ago or so. I spent some time here after I unloaded at a Walmart warehouse that's up north of here, about, I don't know, 20 miles or so. So anyway, I came down here to this Pine Grove truck stop, you know, because they've got a pretty good sized parking lot, and I figured correctly that there would be some parking spots, which there were, and so I was able to just pull right in here and find a place to park back here. And so that's where I'm going to take my break at, and then tomorrow afternoon, pick the load up at Palmyra. It's going to be a load of candy, Palmyra, that goes to Edwardsville, Illinois, and everything should be a drop and hook, although they've got something weird with this load. It says something about a drop at the Hershey plant, which makes, that's absurd. It makes no sense, because they used to be, they would have you pick loads up at the Hershey plant, and then they changed that. They because at Hershey, the actual Hershey plant in Hershey, Pennsylvania, the main Hershey plant, is kind of very cramped. The shipping area is pretty cramped, and so then they, it's, I don't know, sometime a couple year or two ago, they decided, wisely, I think, to all of the loads that are coming out of there. They simply take them over to, there's a Palmyra, basically, but it's about 4 miles away from the Hershey plant. Palmyra is just right next to Hershey, basically. It's the same place for all intents and purposes. So anything coming out of the Hershey plant comes out of the Palmyra, that Palmyra warehouse. And so, you know, I haven't been to the Hershey plant in probably a couple of years. And so I don't understand why they would have me dropping something that I picked up at Palmyra and take it over, you know, 4 miles over to the Hershey plant. That's insane. So I'm not sure what that's about. I guess I'll find out. But the load picks up at Palmyra and it goes to Edwardsville, Illinois, to a warehouse there at Edwardsville, outside of St. Louis. So, you know, there may be a drop at Hershey. But that's, as I say, that's absurd. That doesn't make any sense. Because that's where the stuff came out of, basically. So I don't know where, you know, if, you know, some kind of bookkeeping thing, or there's something weird, or if there actually is something I have to drop off over there. But that, you know, if they were sending something from that warehouse over to the plant, they have trucks that do that. You know, people just kind of shuttling stuff around, shuttle trucks. So that doesn't make any sense. But so I'll find out in the morning, or tomorrow afternoon, actually. So getting back to what I was talking about earlier, one thought, and it's worth repeating, I've talked about it before, but when you learn something, ideally you should learn it, you know, even if you have a teacher, and it's good to have a teacher, but you should learn it and be able to understand it. And it works best if you can learn out of your own curiosity. But beyond that, you should be able to understand. And if you can't understand something, don't just accept something from someone just because you know, it's the teacher, or it's your mom or your dad or whoever. You know, they may be wise, and it's fine to respect that, but don't simply accept something because someone tells you. It's always much better to, if you can understand it yourself. Because if you can understand it yourself, then it becomes yours. It becomes your observation, rather than someone simply telling you and you responding to the greatest pressure. You really want to understand it yourself, and then once you've understood something yourself, then it means something to you, and then you can use that as almost like a building, a base on which to add other pieces of information that you're able to see for yourself. And so it's always best if you can understand things for yourself. And don't just accept something because somebody's got a degree, or they're supposed to be smart, or you think they're smart. Don't just accept stuff blindly like that. You want to use your own intuition, use your own common sense, and then you can basically, you have your own BS detector. You know, that's one way of kind of more of a crude way of putting it, but it's true. So you should be able to look at things yourself, and then you can, you know, you can either believe them or not believe them based on what your own intuition tells you, based on what your own common sense tells you. And that's a much better way of knowing something, because then it means something to you, and you and chances are, you know, the interesting thing is, if you can learn that way, then maybe there's some little piece of information that you kind of pick up from somewhere, and you think, you know, and you kind of think, oh, that's interesting, but then your
for some reason your mind remembers it. And then you pick up another piece of information somewhere else, and that kind of that information kind of sticks out, and your it files it away and it remembers it. And before you know it, if that may happen a few times, and then all of a sudden you come across another piece of information, and you end up kind of putting all of those pieces together, and it means something. And it wasn't anything that you planned. You know, if you try to remember this and you try to force yourself to remember this and force yourself to remember that, it's all dead. It's dead knowledge. It doesn't mean anything. And you just kind of cram your brain full of it. And, boy, that thing is just going crazy. So, but I don't want to unplug it. Sorry about that. I know that that is annoying, that DC to AC adapter is annoying to some people, but... I don't want to unplug the computer. But in any case, I need to bring this to an end. Get headed towards bed. Hope everyone has a great week. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.